Hello, everyone. And Cheryl, I just noticed that Nirmala posted a suggested title. So, okay, you see that. Good. Hello, everyone. Today, we are beginning a new chapter of the Guiding Lights. Last week, I finished NTI 1 Corinthians. And this week, I am beginning a Shambhala classic, The Spiritual Teaching of Ramana Maharshi. If you don't have that book and if you want to be able to read along with me, you can get that book from smile.amazon.com. Of course, you can also get it from amazon.com. But if you get it from smile.amazon.com and request Awakening Together as your charity of choice, then Amazon will make a donation to Awakening Together when you order the book from smile.amazon.com. I get all of my Amazon orders from smile.amazon.com now. Again, the name of the book is The Spiritual Teaching of Ramana Maharshi. And there are really a number of books. Some of them even have similar names. So you want to make sure if you're ordering the book that I'm going to be sharing from, you want to make sure that you get that exact title. The Spiritual Teaching of Ramana Maharshi. And what I am going to do today is probably start by reading the brief biographical sketch that's in the front of that book for anyone who might not know Ramana Maharshi. And then I'm going to play a song by Kirtana, which is called Ramana's Song. And then we'll dive in with the very first chapter, which is called Nanyar, which means, who am I? One thing that's kind of interesting is also in the foreword of this book, there is a 1, 2, 3, 4 page foreword written by Carl Jung. I'm not going to read that, but that's in here as well, which is kind of an interesting person to be writing the foreword, I think. So let me just begin with the brief biographical sketch, as it is documented in this book. And then, like I said, we'll play the song and then we'll get started. Ramana Maharshi, born in 1879 and died in 1950, was one of the greatest spiritual teachers of modern-day India. At the age of 17, he attained a profound experience of the true self without the guidance of a guru, and thereafter remained conscious of his identity with the absolute at all times. After some years of silent seclusion, he finally began to reply to the questions put to him by spiritual seekers all over the world. He followed no particular traditional system of teaching, but rather spoke directly from his own experience of non-duality. Ramana Maharshi wrote virtually nothing. His teaching took the form of conversations with visitors seeking his guidance, as transcribed by followers. The brief instructions he left with his followers, and a few songs. His method of instruction was to direct the questioner again and again to his true self and to recommend as a path to realization a tireless form of self-inquiry featuring the question, who am I? The transcribed conversations of Ramana Maharshi are known among spiritual seekers the world over and prized for their great inspirational power, which transcends all religious differences. Sri Ramana Maharshi was born on 29 December 1879 in Tiruchuli, Tamil Nadu, in South India. The son of Shundaram Ayer, I have no idea how my pronunciation is, so y'all are just going to have to enjoy that. The son of Shundaram Iyer, a scribe and country lawyer. He was given the name Venkataraman, abbreviated as Ramana. At the age of 17, he suddenly had an experience of death one day, in which he realized that the body dies, but the consciousness is not touched by death. I am immortal consciousness. All these, he later reported, were no idle speculations. They went through me like a powerful, living truth that I experienced directly, almost without thinking. I, that is, the true I, or the true self, was reality, the only reality, in this momentary state. All conscious activity that was related to my body flowed into this I. From that moment, all attention was drawn, as if by powerful magic, to the I, or the self. The fear of death was permanently extinguished. From this time on, I remained fully absorbed in the self. After this experience, Venkataraman lost all interest in things of the world and ultimately left home without his parents' permission to find his way to the holy mountain of Arunachala. There he spent several years in silent self-absorption, first in a dark corner of a temple in Tiruvannamalai, at the foot of the mountain, and later in various caves on the mountain itself. During this time, he totally neglected all care of the body, and at one point was virtually chewed up by insects. Even when his mother sought him out and attempted to get him to return home, he did not break his silence, but rather acted as though he did not see her. When his followers begged him to make some response to his mother's desperate pleas, he wrote the following impersonal words on a scrap of paper. The fate of the soul is determined in accordance with its karma. What is not meant to happen will not happen, however much you wish it. What is meant to happen will happen, no matter what you do to prevent it. This is certain. Therefore, the best path is to remain silent. When Ramana Maharshi later broke his silence and began to respond to questions about the path to the self, an ashram grew up around him in Tiruvannamalai. There, in 1950, ill with cancer, Ramana Maharshi passed into samadhi, maha samadhi. This is what we would call death. The site is still visited today by spiritual seekers of every nationality as a place of pilgrimage where the presence of the great saint can still be felt. Lots and lots and lots of details left out of that story. So maybe also, as I go through the spiritual teaching of Ramana Maharshi, maybe occasionally I'll take breaks from this book and share something else, you know, that's not in this book. Because again, that brief story that I just read you left out a lot of details. But we'll see how this goes. So let me get us started then with a song by Kirtana. The name of this song is Ramana's song. Let me see if I can see where my volume is. I don't want to blast you guys. Okay, here we go.
Home is your aim. Why do you pin center with love, the temple of your heart. Heart is the holy sanctum where I reside. Offer to me the ruby of your mind. That is the sweetest offering of mine that has died. Your mind. That is the
Now we will begin. One thing I want to say about this book before I begin. Some of you, probably if not all of you, know the story about when I scribed the teachings of Inner Ramana. What happened was that while Laurent was living with me, it was a very challenging experience for me. And so what I learned to do when Laurent was living with me is, you know, he would say something, and before I would even answer him, I would look within and I would say, how shall I respond? I was constantly asking within for how to be in that relationship. And what happened was I got very, very comfortable following the guidance of within, and I was quite at peace no matter what seemed to be happening on the outside. When Laurent and I ended that relationship and he left, and it was just me and Jasmine in the house again, what happened was it felt easier again, you know. And so because it felt easier again, I actually did not rely on withinness. It's kind of funny. My mind went back out. My attention went back out. And as my attention went back out, the ego began to come back. There were some people at that time that you know, assisted me in that. There was a group of people who believed that David Fishman and I were in some kind of a cultish relationship. David Fishman was the head of the cult, and I was his second, and everybody else was our victims. And on one particular Yahoo group, they were just making all of these posts all the time about, you know, how evil Dove and I were. And I was seeing them and reading them. And all of that kind of assisted in, you know, dredging up the ego again. And I remember, that December, Laurent left in early December, so in late December, so really just a couple weeks after he left. I always tell this story as it was a few months, but you know what? Now that I look at it, that's wrong. It wasn't a few months. It was a few weeks that this occurred. So actually, I'm not as slow as I thought I was. But a couple of weeks later, I was at Disney World. And when I was at Disney World, I wasn't even reading Yahoo groups or anything. I was with Jasmine and Ron. And what I noticed, though, is that my mind, like while I was brushing my teeth in the morning and getting ready to go, and of course while we're standing in line at Disney World, you know, there's lots of opportunity to just stand there. My mind was just spinning and spinning and spinning with chatter about these people who thought that, you know, Dove and I were involved in this cultist relationship. And I was beginning to notice suffering again. And it was a few weeks more, this continued, you know, into mid-January, maybe even late January. And the mind kept getting worse and worse and worse, and the suffering was more and more acute. And finally, one morning, the way I remember it is January 25th, but maybe I should go back and look. Maybe I don't really remember well. I think Laurent left around December 8th, and so this was January 25th. So it was probably more like 6 weeks than 3 months, which is the way I've told the story before. So about 6 weeks of suffering is my guess, increasing suffering. So finally, after about 6 weeks, give or take a week or two, I said a prayer. And I asked Holy Spirit to please bring me something that would take me to the next step. And that prayer came from my wanting to get out of this suffering that I had fallen into, right? This mental suffering, listening to the head again. When I said that prayer, I immediately felt guidance to go to the computer and order a book from Ramana Maharshi. Now, I got to tell you, I didn't know anything about Ramana Maharshi except for this. I had heard the name from Laurent because Laurent liked him. He liked Ramana Maharshi and Aurobindo. So I had heard the names. There were a couple times when teaching in ACIM Gather when Laurent would start teaching about Ramana Maharshi. And I would start to listen, but I think it was a couple of times. Both times I fell completely asleep on the sofa and slept through the teaching. So I didn't hear consciously anyway. I didn't hear the teachings. I knew it had something to do with who am I. And in fact, I remember once I was on vacation in Colorado. I was with Laurent, but Jasmine and I were visiting Ron. And I was taking a walk around Ron's neighborhood, and I was looking at this beautiful sunset, and I called Laurent, and I told him that I was looking at this beautiful sunset. And he said, "Who sees the sunset?" And I'm like, "I do." You know, and then you're like, "You stupid ass." You know, I mean, just like I knew nothing about this teaching, and I was annoyed. The only other experience I have with Ramana Maharshi was Laurent had all of these books that I would call New Age books about all kinds of things. And of course, there were books on Aurobindo and books on Ramana Maharshi, maybe one or two books on Ramana Maharshi, and then all these other books about twin flames and purple flames and, you know, just all kinds of stuff that I didn't care about at all. And people were starting to come and visit us. And so I asked Laurent, I said, "You know, Laurent, I think that the books in our house should all be pure. I think we should get rid of everything that might mislead someone to look in the wrong direction." And he agreed. He was okay with that. So he let me go through his books and basically get rid of them. You know, I mean, so I went through all of his books. I'm taking them down. I'm putting them in boxes, getting ready to get rid of them. And I picked up this book that he had on Ramana Maharshi. And I suddenly felt, no, you can stay. So I put that book back, and I let that book stay. And when Laurent did leave, you know, on December 8th, he took that book with him. But those are my limited experiences with Ramana Maharshi. So as you can see, I knew really nothing at all except for the name. So when I said this prayer this day and I asked, you know, for something to take me to the next step, I felt this guidance to go to the computer, go to Amazon.com and order a book by Ramana Maharshi. And when I pulled up the books, you know, there are several. This one, The Spiritual Teaching of Ramana Maharshi, I just knew that this was the book I was to get. I knew it without a doubt. So I ordered this book. And, you know, it came within a few days. And when the book came, I opened it up. And I think I just opened it up randomly, expecting that this book was just going to be like the end all, you know, of all books. Like this was it. This was everything. And I began to read it. And I came across all of these words I'd never heard of because I had no experience at all with Indian teachings. You know, all these words like Yanani and Samadhi, and here's a good one. I still don't know what this means. Kevala, Nirvikalpala, or something. Wait, let me try and say it more slowly. Kevala, Nirvikalpa, Samadhi. See, I mean, I don't understand all these words. I can't even say them. And this book is full of them. And so, you know, I was frustrated, and I just threw the book down. And I didn't read it. And then if you guys know the rest of the story, you know, sometime later, the way my memory remembers it is a couple weeks later. But maybe someday I'll go back and check all the actual dates on these things. But I remember it as a couple weeks later, I was sitting there doing whatever contemplation I was doing with the Holy Spirit. And the picture on the front of this book began to come out of the book, right? It would come out and go back in and come out and go back in. And if you know the story, you know I actually tried to ignore that because I had zero interest in Ramana Maharshi, even if his picture is going to come alive out of a book. So I tried to ignore it. It was disturbing my contemplation. But it continued to happen. And that's when I heard that familiar voice of the Holy Spirit, which I knew very, very well, tell me to ask him what he wanted to say to me. And that was the beginning of me receiving messages from what I call inner Ramana, right? So in that way, this is the book that started all of that. It was sometime later when I actually read this book. And this book was deeper than Inner Ramana. So what I found when I read this book was I found You know, certainly there were things that I received from Ramana, like the mantra, I am that I am. We even heard that in Kirtana's song just now, I am that I am. And eventually we'll see Ramana Maharshi in this book recommending I am that I am. So I saw similarities which were striking, where I knew that that inner voice that I heard was indeed the same master. The inner Ramana taught me self-inquiry, and always obviously self-inquiry is a big thing with Ramana Maharshi. But this book is much deeper. And the first time I read this book, you know, just like with A Course in Miracles, I absorbed a certain amount. I have now read this book more times than I can count. And even with that, I am looking very much forward to this series, because I believe as I go through this book again in the guiding light, it's going to mean even more to me. However, that first experience that I had with this book, having lots of words in it that I didn't recognize and didn't pronounce, I couldn't pronounce, you know, that's still here. Some of these words I have learned with time now, you know, like I'm familiar with samadhi and yanani and, you know, some of these words, but some of these words I'm not familiar with. So sometimes we may stop and look words up. There is a, I think if I remember correctly, yeah, there's a glossary in the back. Sometimes I may just substitute English words that I know fit. You know, we'll just see how it goes. And sometimes I may very, 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 very poorly mispronounce a word. And so that's all just kind of a warning. warning, Will Robinson, as we get started. I am in no way an expert on Sanskrit words, nor do I have any interest in being an expert on Sanskrit words. It's the heart of this material that I'm after. So with that said, let's begin our journey. So the very first chapter in this book is called Who Am I? Which is Nanyar, I believe. Nanyar in Tamil, which is the language that Ramana Maharshi would have spoken. By the way, Ramana Maharshi also knew English, because as a young boy, he was sent to a missionary Bible school. So he knew English and he also knew the Bible. So occasionally you may hear some reference to the Bible show up. He was educated in that way. But Tamil, I think is the proper way to say it, was his native language. By the way, one little piece of information about Tamil Nadu, which is the state in India that he's from. It's just, you know, this is just trivia. It has nothing to do with Ramana Maharshi, but it interested me when I discovered it. That's where Tamil Nadu, or Tamil Nadu, that is where the book Little Black Sambo comes from, which is interesting because when I was a young child, like 3 and 4 years old, Little Black Sambo was my very, very, very favorite book. In fact, it's the book that I knew every word by heart and exactly when to turn the page so it looked like I was reading it, but I wasn't. It was just memorized. I loved that book. And that book actually comes from Tamil Nadu. I think some people thought that Little Black Sambo was African American, even though we didn't have that term then. actually, he is Indian. South Indian, and South Indians have very dark skin. And if you remember, there were tigers in the story, and of course there's tigers in South India as well. And the story was written by an English woman who lived in Tamil Nadu, and I don't know if it was her maid or, you know, somebody in her household who worked for her, an Indian woman, had 2 children. And this English woman actually spent a lot of time with those 2 children. She you know, played with the 2 children. I don't know if she didn't have children of her own, and so she really, you know, really enjoyed being with them or what the deal was. But she spent a lot of time with these 2 children in her household. And she wrote the book Little Black Sambo for those 2 children. So when I found out later that Ramana Maharshi, who became my inner teacher, was from Tamil Nadu, and my very favorite book when I was 3 and 4 was from the same place, I just thought that was kind of a funny coincidence. All right. So, here we go. Who am I? First, there's an introduction, probably written by the author. The author would be the person who is just presenting the translations to us, because these are transcribed conversations. And the author's name is not on the book, although I do know the author, and I can look that up later. I have it somewhere else. But he never put his name on the book. But I will tell you, even though you may not know him, you are familiar with his translation and publishing work, because not the same man who translated the spiritual teaching of Ramana Maharshi and wrote it down for us is the same man who translated and wrote down for us, "I Am That," by Sri Nisargadatta Maharaj. He knew both of these beings. He listened to both of their conversations, transcribed them, translated them into English, and made them available to us. The same guy. I believe he was an Englishman. So in a way, you're familiar with his work, and he didn't put his name on either book. So maybe I'll look that up for you later. I have that written down elsewhere. Okay, so here we go. So this is probably his commentary at the beginning. "As all living beings desire to be happy always, without misery, as in the case of everyone, there is observed supreme love for one's self. And as happiness alone is the cause for love, in order to gain that happiness, which is one's nature, and which is experienced in the state of deep sleep where there is no mind, one should know one's self." That's a very long sentence. But the gist of it is, you are happiness and you are love. So if you want happiness and if you want love, you should just get to know your true self, because that is happiness and that is love. "For that," he continues, "the path of knowledge, the inquiry of the form, 'Who am I?' is the principal means." So now we go into the conversation. So the questioner, this is just Ramana Maharshi demonstrating. Okay, this is Ramana Maharshi demonstrating how self-inquiry works. That's what this book opens with. So first, the question, who am I? The first thing that he recommends that we look at is the gross body, which he says is composed of the seven humors. And I don't know what the seven humors are. And some of this stuff, to be honest, I don't care about. I don't dig into learning what the seven humors are. You know, seven parts of the body, maybe. You know, maybe we're talking about the bones, the muscles, the skin, the blood. You know, I really don't know. But it doesn't matter to me. That's not the reason why I'm looking at this book. So the gross body, which is composed of the seven humors, I am not, right? So the very first thing Ramana Maharshi is looking at in this demonstration of who am I is basically, am I this body? And the decision made is, I am not. It continues, the five cognitive sense organs, that is the sense of hearing, touch, sight, taste, and smell, which apprehend their respective objects, sound, touch, color, taste, and odor, I am not. The five, I don't even know some of these English words, the five conative sense organs, that is the organs of speech, locomotion, grasping, excretion, and procreation, which have as their respective functions speaking, moving, grasping, excreting, and enjoying, I am not. The five vital airs, prana, etc., which perform respectively the five functions of in-breathing, etc., I am not. Even the mind which thinks, I am not. Another English word I don't know. You guys might know this word. Let me type it in. Well, I can't hear you, though. Tell me how to pronounce it. Let me type it anyway. In case I mispronounce it, you guys, because I just might. You guys might know the word, and then you'll understand what I'm saying. Where if I don't type it in, you won't know. There's the word. the nescience, too, which is endowed only with residual impressions of objects, and in which there are no objects and no functions. I am not. Now, I'm not just going to read this, because I don't think that has any purpose at all. I think that what we should do is look at some of these things so that we can see as a direct experience within ourselves that we are not these things. And I'm not going to start with just the body as a whole, because I don't think the body as a whole is the easiest. I think what I'll start with are the five cognitive sense organs, the senses of hearing, touch, sight, taste, and smell. And why don't we, nay science, is that how you say the word? why don't we begin with sight? So what Ramana Maharshi is doing is a thorough investigation in order to determine what he is and what he is not, or in our case, what I am and what I am not. So let's start with something simple. Let's start with seeing. As far as I know, everybody here can see. And in fact, what you can do is just look around right now and see whatever it is that you see, and notice that you see. Notice also, in fact, go ahead and pick one thing to look at, just one thing, and kind of hold it in your field of vision. And I happen to be looking at a pencil box filled with pens, and each of the pens has a flower on the end, so it looks like a bouquet of flowers, but it's really pens. So as my eyes are resting on this box of pens, what I'm going to do now is I'm going to keep my eyes on that box of pens, but I'm going to shift my attention to the fact that I see. Now, you can't actually see seeing like you can see a box of pens or whatever you're looking at, but you are aware that you can see, right? Just remain aware that you see. And then close your eyes. And when you close your eyes, you no longer see. That sense has been taken away. But have you been taken away? And of course, the answer is no, right? The I am presence is still here. So we can open our eyes and we can close our eyes, and we can see that seeing comes and goes, but it has no effect on the I am presence. None whatsoever. And if we had the ability to put on some, you know, noise-canceling headphones that were really very, very good, so that as soon as you put them on, you really could not hear a single thing, we could go through the same experiment with hearing. You know, we could listen. Like right now, I can hear the wind outside. You can hear my voice. We could pay attention to the fact that we can hear. And then we could put on those really good noise-canceling headphones and notice we can't hear anything. But we can notice that the I am presence is here either way. If I take off the headphones, if I put the headphones on, you know, the hearing comes and goes, but the I am presence remains the same. And though I've always been able to taste, I have, it seems like once I met someone, you know, somewhere, might even have been at a spiritual conference, who told me they had lost all sense of taste. They had an illness, and after that illness, they could not taste food anymore at all. But if you imagine for a moment that your sense of taste is completely taken away, notice the I am presence is still here. So just a little bit of thoughtful looking at these five senses, we can tell that is not what I am, right? I enjoy the five senses. I enjoy seeing. I enjoy hearing. I enjoy tasting, smelling, etc. But they are not what I am. And so that's what he means. And, of course, he says the five cognitive sense organs, the senses of hearing, touch, sight, taste, and smell, which apprehend their respective objects, I am not. And, in fact, if we were put in some kind of a machine, and I think these devices actually exist. I think they're like float chambers where you can be put inside these chambers and you're floating so that you don't even feel anything, like you don't feel like you're laying on a bed or anything. You can't feel really anything. And you're put inside, you can't hear anything, you can't see anything, you can't feel anything. You know, like all of your sense organs are taken away, or all of your senses are taken away. And yet the I Am presence is still there, right? I Am is not all dependent on sensing. And then, of course, he looks at some other things like speech. I mean, we all can tell that that could be true. I mean, obviously, we can all talk. Sometimes maybe we talk too much. but if you took away our ability to talk, right, the I Am presence would still be there. He looks at locomotion, the ability to move about. We'll call it right now the ability to walk. You know, maybe all of us can walk. But if you took away our ability to walk, the I Am presence would still be there. In fact, the time that I got thrown off of the horse I was right there on the line between Arizona and Utah, and I think that I kind of went back and forth across the line, actually, on the horse. But I think I was on the Usatal side of the line. So I think I was in Utah. I was at Monument Valley. I got thrown from a horse. And at first, I wasn't certain I didn't break my back or something. There was just so much pain. Therefore, I wasn't certain that I would ever move again. I thought this might have been it. This might have been it. This might have changed everything. And my very first thought after I had that thought, this might have changed everything. Then my very next thought was, okay, then I just have to learn to be happy with this. And I thought this might mean never moving again, right? But the I Am presence was still there. You know, there was a genuine idea that locomotion may have been removed from me forever. In fact, maybe even no ability, maybe even paralyzed from the neck down, right? That was seemed like a possibility in that moment. But yet the I Am presence was still there. Grasping, you know, the ability to reach out and grasp something, to pull it towards you. Or even let's look at the mental ability of grasping, although he's not looking at that right now. But let's go ahead and look at that too. Let's look at the ability to want. What if there was some kind of a magic spell that could be cast upon you and you just never wanted anything again? It wasn't that you were depressed. You know, you were happy with what is, but that ability to want, that ability to think of something you don't have and want it is taken away. It's gone. But the I Am presence is still there. Right? So you aren't your desires. You aren't your grasping. Because if that was taken away, if that could be taken away, you would still be present. Excretion. You might be very, very comfortable, very, very uncomfortable if you could not poop or pee. again, you know that you are not your poop or pee, right? You know, it's funny, little kids don't know that, I don't think. I think, isn't that what they, as the psychiatrists say, that little kids at first identify with their poop? Some of them do, and this is why it's hard to potty train them. And they don't like the idea of you know, consciously being separated from their poop. I don't know, I've heard that somewhere. I don't know if it's true. Anyway, so this is the idea of self-inquiry. And I told you I was going to save the sense of loss, yeah, when they poop. Yeah, that's what I've heard. But, you know, I don't have much of a sense of loss when I poop, do you? I know I'm not my poop. Sense of relief sometimes. Let's look at the body as a whole. I mentioned that the body is one of the most difficult ones, and I have spent a lot of time looking at the body. I would say that for me, the toughest things to look at, like it's, oh wait, I want to read what Jacqueline has written here. I saw a kid on Facebook recently crying because he had to flush his poop away. Yeah, that's what I've heard. That's what I've heard. So I guess that is true for some kids. Yeah. Fortunately, again, like I said, most of us know we are not our poop. But I think the most difficult things for me to practice self-inquiry with in a very genuine way, and you know, I want to do everything in a very genuine way. I am not interested in intellectual spirituality. I am not interested in walking around and saying, I am not a body, when really I have no true sense of that. You know, I want to look. I want to genuinely investigate, which is what I really believe Ramana Maharshi is encouraging here, even though he went through that pretty quickly. I want to genuinely investigate whether I am these things. And the most challenging things for me to look at have been three things, which kind of, you know, go together in a way. One is the body. You know, it's easy for me to see I'm not my seeing, right? We just demonstrated that. You can close your eyes. You can't see anymore. The I am presence is still here. You know, it is easy for me to see I'm not my sense of smell. If something happened and the sense of smell disappeared, the I am presence would still be here. I'm not my ability to move, my locomotion, right? These things are easy to see. But am I my body? I didn't find that so easy to really see for myself. Am I my brain? You know, I remember, at least this is the way I remember it. You remember brains don't remember things perfectly, but I remember a black and white, I think it was a Frankenstein movie or a Bride of Frankenstein movie when I was a little kid, and the nutty professor, the crazy professor that was doing this stuff, he would remove brains and keep the brain and then put it in Frankenstein or the Bride of Frankenstein, right? So that the person was actually in the brain. And so when he put the brain in the machine became the person. And so this thought, this thought, you know, as I started the spiritual path, I mean, it really stuck with me. I mean, I think I even remember that movie, which I do realize is fiction. But this thought was there that maybe I am just my brain. You know, maybe everything that makes me me is in the brain, and when the brain dies, I cease to be. So there's the question, am I the body? Am I the brain? And then, am I my thoughts? You know, it's very, very easy for us to say, I am not my thoughts. And yet, the majority of us, if not all of us, behave and feel based on our intimate relationship with those thoughts. You know, if those thoughts say, I don't like tight spaces, and then I'm in a very small elevator like the one at Ramana Towers in Tiruvannamalai, and that elevator gets stuck and my brain is saying, I don't like tight spaces, I start to get scared. I start to hyperventilate. I start to feel claustrophobic. You know, so am I my thoughts when I'm so intimately connected to them and I behave and feel based on them? Oh, Kathy says she just contemplated that today and shared. Is this posted in sharing in contemplation? Will I be able to read that? So I don't think you taught in here today, so I'm assuming that's what you mean. Yes, okay, good. I look forward to reading that. So, what I'm going to begin to share, and I'm noticing I only have 8 minutes left, so some of this sharing may go over to next week. But I'm going to begin to share how I looked at these three things, which were the toughest for me to look at, and determined I am not that. I am not that. I am not that. And I'm going to start with thought, because I think this is the order that I went. I think I went thought, and then brain, and then body, in that order. So my experience with realizing that I was not the thought was actually a little simpler than I thought it would be. I noticed that I could let go of a thought, just like I can let go of my poop, right? I can poop and flush my poop down the toilet. Therefore, I am not the poop. Do you agree I am not my poop? I'm hoping you do. I'm hoping you outgrew that I'm my poop thought. I can let go of a thought in the same way. And I'm going to make up a story, Kathy, so this is not true. I have to make up stories now because I really don't have as many, you know, judgmental thoughts as I used to. But, you know, Kathy just stated, I just contemplated that today and shared. Well, what if I thought, you know, Kathy's trying to look better than me, right? What if I had that thought? I can look at that thought. I can see that that thought is ego, a competition thought. It stems from the I am bad belief. I can realize I don't want that energy, that way of thinking in me anymore. And I can just flush that thought down the toilet like I can my poop. Therefore, I am no more my thoughts than I am my poop. I may still have the confusion, you know, like the boy on Facebook who was crying because he had to flush his poop away, right? He has a confusion. He thinks he is his poop. And I may still have the confusion sometimes that I think I am my thoughts, and so I believe them. But if I really, really, really look, I can see that's not true. Because if I can let go of it, I'm not it. I let go of the thought, and the I am presence is still here. Just like I close my eyes and I can't see, but the I am presence is still here. Or I could be paralyzed from the neck down, and all movement is lost, but the I am presence is still here. Also, I used to experiment with this. I couldn't do it for long. I could only do it for a few seconds at a time. But I could have a thoughtless mind. And one of the best ways to have a thoughtless mind is to close your eyes and then ask yourself, what's my next thought? And watch for it. And when you ask, what's my next thought? And you really watch for it, the thoughts kind of hide. They don't come. I always say thoughts are like cockroaches. You know, if you've ever lived in Florida or anywhere where cockroaches are fairly common, you know, and you have some roaches in your house, but when you walk in and turn on the light, they all run. You don't ever see them. But when you turn on that light inside, that awareness, and you say, you know, what's my next thought? The thoughts run and hide, right? They're like cockroaches. And so you get to experience at least a few seconds of no thought. Well, during that few seconds of no thought, did you die? The I am presence was still there, right? I mean, let's try it if you didn't try it, okay? Look and see if you die when you do this. What is my next thought? I'll stop there. But you may have experienced a few seconds of thoughtlessness that if you were really looking, you know, you really look intently for that next thought and it just doesn't come. And yet the I Am presence was still there. So if I can let go of a thought, and if I can have a thoughtless mind, then I am not my thoughts. I may have the confusion sometimes believing them. You know, I may forget to be aware. But it is clear with investigation that I am not my thoughts. I only have 2 minutes left, so I'll go over the brain thing and then we'll look at the body next week. The brain thing happened by accident. I really did have a fear, a genuine fear that I was nothing but my brain, right? And that all the spiritual stuff was just a bunch of wishful thinking. And that when the brain died, everything that I am dies. That consciousness comes from the brain. Thoughts come from the brain. Personality comes from the brain. What happened for me is my brain changed, and that was a blessing. And in fact, I went from being a very sharp woman, very sharp, you know, very, you know, pretty smart, very sharp, able to think quickly and well, to having what is called, I guess, menopause mind. When I went into menopause, it was almost like having Alzheimer's. I couldn't remember the simplest things. I couldn't remember if I had on a blouse and I knew it was a new blouse and you said to me, oh, what a lovely blouse. Where did you get that? I couldn't remember anything about where I got it. I couldn't remember if I bought it myself, if someone gave it to me as a gift. Lots of basic ways of thinking. In fact, yesterday you may have heard I had a moment kind of like that when I pulled out of the garage and then I knew there was something I was supposed to do, but I really couldn't remember what it was. Jasmine reminded me it was close the garage door, right? However, that doesn't happen much to me anymore. My brain has gotten better again. That was just a senior moment. But for 2 or 3 years, I went through that all of the time. I mean, on a daily basis, my brain did not work right. It only worked when I taught, which I thought was interesting. When I taught, other than losing words, it was still pretty clear. But in daily life, my brain did not work. I forgot simple things, just like Alzheimer's. But what I appreciated about that is that I could tell that I was not my brain. Because the I Am presence that was here when the brain was sharp was the exact same I Am presence here witnessing this Alzheimer's-like brain. There was no change in the actual me. And that's when I realized that I am not the brain. And so I became very, very grateful for that experience because it cleared up that doubt for me. And so right now I'm out of time. So next week when we come back, we will look at the body. We'll examine the body and see if we are the body. Okay? See you all later. Bye-bye.